down on Main Street.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Wisconsin forager is on a mission to eat only what he can forage for 1 month. We'll talk to him about what he's eating and the message he's trying to send. Now, Wisconsin Public Radio is partnering with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison for a project that aims to find out what issues are most important to Wisconsin voters. It's called the Main Street Agenda and includes polling and a series of free public town hall events across the state to meet with voters and hear what concerns are on top of their minds. The first town hall event is on Wednesday at Milwaukee Public Library's Centennial Hall starting at 7 p.m. Future town halls will be held in Pewaukee, Green Bay, and Wausau in the lead up to the election. Find out about those events at WPR.org/presents. And you can join in now at 800-642-1234. What issue or issues are most important to you in the upcoming election? Do you think the candidates running for office at various levels are addressing those issues that are important to you? Do you feel like the candidates and maybe even the media are overlooking important stuff or, you know, talking more horse race than substantive issues? Call in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Webb Yaki is director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs, helping organize this project, and she's a professor of public affairs at UW-Madison. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Like a lot of people, Susan, I see a lot of campaign ads. I get a lot of campaign emails. I know what candidates and parties want voters to think about. Why is it important to reach out and try to get a sense of what's on the minds of the voters themselves?
Well, I think today a lot of people are frustrated with politics, right? The horse race coverage, the focus on what divides us as opposed to what brings us together. And that's really where this project came together, this Main Street Agenda project between WPR, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the La Follette School, to try to figure out what are some of the issues that people care about in terms of public policy, and how do we get our elected officials to start talking about them?
And you've got a few different ways of doing this. Last time I talked to you, it was about a survey that you and La Follette School did. Could you tell us about that? And then what's led into the town hall effort?
Absolutely. So this is kind of an interesting the Main Street Agenda Project is sort of interesting in that all three of the institutions wanted to do the same thing, kind of get the public talking about the policy issues they cared about. And we were all kind of going about it on our own way. And so let me tell you about what La Follette started with. And that was about a year ago, we did our inaugural La Follette School Policy Poll. And the idea behind the policy poll was to reach out all the way across Wisconsin. So we actually had over 1,500 responses from 71 of the 72 counties on a large public policy poll. And the point of the poll was to ask, what are the issues that you care about the most? Really take the temperature of Wisconsinites and then report that information back and let people look at the data and kind of analyze the data on their own, which is what we did all of this past year. That was really the La Follette School's main effort in trying to take the temperature on public policy issues here in our state.
And then we've got these town halls coming up. And I know Gannett and the News and the Journal Sentinel have surveys of their own. And they're trying to go, I think, just beyond, you know, check the box, but also explain and get people talking and typing or talking about why these issues matter. Why do you think that's important?
I think it's so important to think about having a dialogue around some of these issues. And that's what these four upcoming events that are taking place across the state are gonna do. So we're gonna have La Follette faculty experts at each of those events. And those experts are gonna share, you know, information and evidence and analysis and knowledge. They're gonna share information from our La Follette School poll, which again occurred last year and was a scientific poll of Wisconsinites. But we're going to combine that kind of La Follette piece with a part of the agenda in each of the events focused on really listening, listening to what citizens are saying across the political spectrum. So, you know, Republicans, Democrats, and independents on the different public policy issues that they care about. And so citizens are going to be a huge part of the agenda for each of these events, too.
I know from my vantage in the media, sometimes it's easy to think, okay, that person's a Republican, so they're going to believe A, B, and C. And that person's a Democrat, they're going to believe 1, 2, and 3. But then I know from talking to callers and from some of the responses that this project has gotten already, for many people, it's a lot more complicated than that. And I think it might surprise people how much nuance there is out there.
Absolutely. I mean, people are complicated. You know, I'm a social scientist, and a huge part of my job is to seek the truth, to figure out what are the commonalities, what are the systematic things that drive people, in this case, in their politics. You know, I'm a political scientist, so that's what I'm interested in. But people are really more complicated than how they boil down in terms of their partisan identification. And that is one of the reasons why we want to get people talking, to kind of figure out those complexities, but also to try to see where there's some points of unity across the political spectrum. And I think that will give people some courage to, and hopefully some courage for our elected officials to identify some of those issues and really go after them and tackle them on behalf of our citizens as well.
That's interesting. Maybe a solution, or a part of a solution anyway, to polarization here, if everybody on side A believes that, well, there are two sides in the first place, but also that everybody on side B automatically believes these things that are the opposite of what we believe, and we don't get any nuance beyond that. That could be one thing that's driving polarization. Do you think that's part of the story?
I do think that's part of the story. And I think when we resort to just talking points, and it's too easy to demonize the other side. But when you hear from them what they're going through, why they prioritize a particular issue, you start to understand their perspective more. And that is so important in today's society.
We're talking to Susan Webb Yaki from the La Follette School of Public Affairs, part of this project. The Main Street Agenda, we here at WPR are part of this. The Journal Sentinel, part of it, their ideas lab. Try to figure out what is on voters' minds, what we care about and why. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you care about in this midterm election? Why? What led you there? Is there something that you think would surprise you about people who maybe know some of your political views, an issue that maybe you would surprise them on with what you think of it? Is there an issue that you think is important, but you're not quite sure where you stand? Because it's complicated. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon. This is a great topic. It's very timely. Thanks for the opportunity to share my opinion. I really believe that public money should be spent on everyone, regardless of your age or gender or, you know, walk of life or economic class. I really believe our state parks unite us as a state. I hiked 4 miles yesterday in Copper Falls State Park, and I did Pattison State Park last month. I really think that we need to fund our parks and get these picnic tables painted and repaired. There are projects I know the DNR has all over the state that need to be fully funded, and we got the money. I say let's do it 100%.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. And this is an example, Susan, of the kind of thing you might hear, a kind of a basic bread and butter issue that probably no politician on either side is going to think, oh, this is going to pump up the base, right?
Maybe not, but boy, does Jeff identify something that does bring people together. You know, people want to explore and really use the natural wonder of Wisconsin. It's one of the reasons why I moved here, was because the beauty of the state, and I know I'm not alone. And so I think Jeff identifies something that really can bring Wisconsinites together, and that is, you know, public spending on public goods like parks that a lot of people can use and appreciate.
Thanks again for the call, Jeff, at 800-642-1234. But, okay, the incentive structure for a politician, Susan, I could spend my time, if I'm running for office, talking about state parks. Everybody likes them. Or I could focus on a divisive issue that I know is going to rally my base and maybe help drive them to donate and to vote. How does our incentive structure skew things one way or the other?
Well, you know, Rob, we're moving into the general election, away from the primary elections now. And so the hope would be that candidates who made it through the primaries are now looking more for the consensus issues. So they rallied their base, they got the nomination, and now they're going to need to get the votes of some of Wisconsin's independents to win, at least in the statewide elections. And so if you go back to the La Follette School's policy poll, you know, what were some of the consensus issues for people across the political spectrum, including independents? And those really were healthcare, some economic issues, the federal budget deficit, for instance, where people really care about the federal budget deficit and sort of in some of the the fact that we might be extending on that debt to the next generation. You know, those two issues in our poll across all age groups, all income groups, the lowest and highest levels of education and all political identifications identified those issues as either quite a problem or an extremely big problem for our country. So if you're looking for consensus issues, they're out there. In particular, I would point out healthcare is one of them.
We're talking to public affairs professor Susan Webb-Yaki from UW-Madison about the Main Street Agenda Project, which hopes to measure what voters care about the most in the upcoming election. And not just the I care about this and not that, but also some of the why behind it. What led people to these decisions? There are nuanced views in some cases. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you were answering the survey, what issue would be top of mind for you in the upcoming election? Maybe even if it isn't the most important thing, what do you wish you heard more from the candidates about or covered in the media along the way? Are there things where you think, yeah, maybe this is something that both parties can work together on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Susan Webb-Yaki about the issues that matter most to voters. She's a professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, a partner in the Main Street Agenda Project, along with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Wisconsin Public Radio. There's surveys, there's upcoming town halls as well in a few locations around the state. You can town hall right now at 800-642-1234. What do you want candidates to talk about as they compete for your votes this November? Have you heard candidates talk about the issue or issues most important to you? Is the media covering the right stuff along the way? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Lynn joins us now in Wauwatosa. Lynn, hello.
Hi, thank you. This is a lot of interesting things to think about. But my thought is that the whole abortion issue, I know that the people that are anti-choice believe they have the right point of view about abortion. But I'm thinking that because there has been so much publicity since the Supreme Court came down with their decision, so many people are finally seeing how necessary abortion is for women, for families, and that it's a decision that is such a personal one, such a gut-wrenching one for everybody. And hopefully the anti-choice people, bless their hearts, but I hope that they're coming to understand that abortion is necessary.
Lynn, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call. And Susan, if I'm not mistaken, the survey you were talking about earlier came out before the Dobbs U.S. Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. But what are you watching for? What are you seeing on the issue of abortion that Lynn brings up?
Yeah, the La Follette School policy poll did come out before the Dobbs decision, but we do have some more information on, Lynn's point on abortion. So the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is also, as part of the Main Street Agenda Project, also doing an opinion survey. So there, anybody that wants to write in and talk about what are some of their top issues that they would like to see both the media cover in advance of the election, as well as our politicians talking about, there's a chance to kind of reply to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel opinion survey as well. And that's been taking data all this summer and takes data right now, too, if you're interested in participating. Google the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as well as the Main Street Agenda Project. But to Lynn's point, abortion ranks very highly on that list. So that's an issue that is really concerning to a lot of Wisconsinites. It ranks in the top three behind the future of democracy as well as climate change. I will say that on the opinion survey, this is whoever provides their opinion. And so we do have an overrepresentation in that survey of Democrats. But one of the neat things about the Main Street Agenda Project and the upcoming four events is that we're going to have panels of people talking and listening to each other across the political spectrum.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. And talk about nuance on an issue. I've seen survey results. You know, we may think everybody's on one side or the other, and some people are strongly on one side or the other, and a lot of people have mixed feelings one way or the other, or want to see some limits but not all, or sometimes disagree with themselves. There's a lot of, again, nuance in the middle there, Susan.
Absolutely. And, you know, abortion is one of these really interesting issues that you really do need to get people together talking to really understand the dynamics. And we know that because we know that how you ask polling questions on abortion really matters to how people reply, right? So that gives you some insight right there that, you know, horse race polls or political snapshots, they're one type of data, but also getting together and talking through issues and understanding where people are coming from and their perspective is a way to contextualize that, and it's really necessary.
Thanks again for the call in at 800-642-1234. Kathy joins us next in Elkhorn. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
What issue did you want to bring up, Kathy?
Well, I think the major issue now is maintaining a safe democracy with, you know, with what happened with the last administration and, you know, not ensuring a safe transfer of power. That can't not happen, or none of these issues will be worked on. It'll be a craziness. And, well, you'll have one ruling and everybody just following suit. You won't have a democracy.
Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. And Susan, I know this is something that has come up in the Main Street agenda, people concerned about the future of Democratic government.
Absolutely. And I know this will come up in our four events across the state as well. And I hope it does. I mean, this is something that all of us need to pull our heads, our minds, our bodies together and really tackle, because in order for the United States to continue, we have to solve this problem together. And there's concerns on both sides of the aisle, and we need to identify those and work through them together.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Susan Webb Yaki, professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, talking about the Main Street Agenda Project, partnership between the La Follette School, Wisconsin Public Radio, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, trying to collect information, figure out what people think about big issues, what you want to hear about. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 in the run-up to the election. What do you want to hear candidates talking about? What do you want to hear the media asking candidates about? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Susan, of course, I'm coming at this from the media angle myself. What are you hoping that media outlets, including Wisconsin Public Radio, might be able to do with some of your final products along the way?
I think that between the polling that the La Follette School did, which is a statistical poll, alongside the opinion survey the information is being collected right now, I'm hoping that, you know, media outlets, you know, all different types of media outlets take that data and think about what are the stories that could really impact Wisconsinites. And I think that's, you know, vital to move forward.
Let's go back to our callers with George on the line in Ashland. George, what issues on your mind?
I'd like to see our candidates asked about where they stand on the division between church and state, between religion and governance. It seems to flow into a lot of issues, schools, abortion, and many other dimensions. I'd like to know where each candidate stands, church versus state, where they draw the line.
George, thanks a lot for that call. Interesting. Susan, is this something that you've had come up at any point so far in the Main Street agenda?
You know, I think it hasn't much come up. And, you know, I think George has put his finger on something that's a really interesting divide across society that we don't talk as much about as we used to. So we used to talk a lot about candidate religion. We used to talk a lot about whether, you know, the role of religion in society. And we're starting to see a lot of our public policy issues intersect with those issues. I mean, certainly the Dobbs decision is front and center recently. But I think putting your finger right on the division between church and state, both the Supreme Court's interpretation of that division, as well as society's interpretation of that, has not been as a part of the Main Street Agenda Project thus far. And I hope it comes out in some of our candidate forums coming forward, these four town hall forums coming forward.
Thanks a lot for that call, George, at 800-642-1234. The overall project here, I mean, people do polling all the time, of course, and people do town halls sometimes. Susan, are you hoping to build a model for the way we investigate public opinion for maybe future elections?
Absolutely. I'm really hoping this partnership continues. And I know that there's going to be some efforts after these town halls as well to kind of continue the conversation. And that's on our agenda. We don't want this to be a one-off. These are incredibly important issues. So let me plan a couple ways for your audience members that are here in Madison to continue the conversation as well. The LaFollette School is hosting a very large forum next March, so on March 1st, 2023, that's going to be on the topic of trust in government. So we're going to spend a whole day bringing in high-profile speakers, having scholars, citizens, politicians come together and talk about the role of trust in government and how that's eroded across time and how that intersects with this idea of the future of democracy. Now, that would be another way to continue the conversation in March 2023.
Susan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's Susan Webb Yaki, a professor and director of the LaFollette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. That's one of the partners in the Main Street Agenda Project, along with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and here at Wisconsin Public Radio. The goal to figure out what is on voters' minds, not just a yes or no, pro or con, but some of the thoughts and ideas driving opinions around the state. You can participate in a couple ways. There's that survey Susan mentioned at jsonline.com, the website of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wherever you are in the state, you can weigh in with what you think and why you think it over there. Then a series of four town halls in various places around the state. You can find those at wpr.org/presents. Now, the first town hall event that's at Milwaukee Public Library's Centennial Hall, that's coming up Wednesday at 7 p.m. Again, track down those details, find out how to participate if you're able. It's at wpr.org/presents. If you want to send an email right now to tell us what's on your mind, what you want to hear from us about the upcoming elections, love to hear from you. You can email right now, ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, Wisconsin finance writer Emily Guy Birkin joins the show with advice on easy ways to save some money. Plus, you could join in with your own suggestions for other listeners. Join that conversation that's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. I had a great visit to Central Wisconsin yesterday with a WPR listener meetup event at Stony Acres Farm in Athens. It was a great day all around. The weather held up really nicely. Even got a flyover from a bald eagle on the ride there. And it's a very scenic area with just the earliest hints of leaves changing. Mainly, though, I had a great time meeting lots of you. I got to talk to people from Athens and from Marshfield, Merrill, Wisconsin Rapids, Wausau, Tomahawk, Stevens Point, Medford, Weston, and more. Sorry if I'm leaving you out. There are more WPR events coming up. Find out if there's one near you at wpr.org/presents. There's another listener meetups coming up in Prairie du Sac. Launch party for the new WPR podcast, Uprooted, coming up, and those Wisconsin Main Street Agenda town hall sessions. Find them all, wpr.org/presents. And if you have thoughts on WPR, let us know how it fits into your day. Email listener@wpr.org to share your feedback with our audience services department. Stay connected. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new organization is trying to raise the number of Latinx people going into medical careers in Wisconsin. We'll talk to the group's founding president about their goals and how they're going to try to achieve them. Now, you may have tried foraging in Wisconsin, maybe picking blackberries or apples or morel mushrooms, but what about eating only what you can forage? For 1 month, Wisconsin-based climate activist and humanitarian Rob Greenfield is doing that. From the forest to city parks, Rob is eating only what he can forage on a trip between New York and Wisconsin. Rob, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me in, Rob. It's really great to be here.
What got you into serious foraging in the first place?
Well, I actually grew up in northern Wisconsin on Lake Superior and Ashland. And I have to say, for the first 20 years of my life. I love the outdoors. I fished and all of that, but I never paid any attention to the plants. My food came from the grocery store. And about 10 years ago, I started to watch a lot of documentaries and read a lot of books and just started to learn that the way that I was living was causing a lot of destruction. And I largely learned about our food system, how destructive our food system is. And one of the ways that I reconnected to my food was realizing that it's growing freely and abundantly all around me.
Now, you started this current project, I think, on September 9th. Tell us what you are doing.
Yeah, so today is day 10 of 1 month of foraging 100% of my food. So for the whole month, no grocery stores or restaurants, nothing packaged or processed. Even my medicine is coming from nature. And no gardens either. It's food that is growing in the wild. And that can mean like deep in the wild on the Wisconsin River or in the woods, or that can mean abandoned lots in the city here in Madison.
And so it's only stuff you've picked, not like food waste or dumpster diving or things like that, though I think you have some interest in that too.
Yes.
Just stuff you're picking up out of the ground growing more or less wild.
Yeah, the ground or the sky, depending on where it's growing. But yeah, a lot of people know me for my food waste activism. I've done Food Waste Fiasco here in Madison and I've shown that I've dived into thousands of grocery store dumpsters across the country. Some people call that urban foraging, but for this month, no dumpsters. I'm showing that we can exist completely independently from the global industrial food system and that this food is growing freely and abundantly everywhere we go.
Now, I got to be honest, one problem I would have with this is I'm very bad at telling one plant from another. How do you make sure you're eating stuff that you ought to be eating?
Yes. So there's one simple rule to foraging to not die and not get sick. And it's simply don't eat something unless you're completely sure of what it is. So the key with safe foraging is you start with really easy things. Start with the plants that are easy to identify. One great thing to do is get out with a local forager. Here in Madison area, there's a group called What Got Gathered. His name's Andy, and he takes people out on foraging walks. So going out with a forager is an excellent way to get started.
Okay, so what have you mainly been living on this first? Well, you said 10 days of the project.
Yeah, well, wild rice has been one of my main food sources. We are so blessed in Wisconsin to have wild rice. Manomin, the food that grows on water, growing in abundance. Lots of venison, which I actually harvest deer that have been hit by cars, which is, you know, kind of a shocker for some people. Lots of apples. I make a lot of applesauce, and then tons of berries like aronia and choke cherries and wild grapes. Lots of nutritious and delicious greens like stinging nettle and sochan and watercress and dandelion. And then lots of herbal teas, things like elderberry and goldenrod for things like this, and of course lots of mushrooms.
Now you've picked a pretty abundant time of year. Is this something we really could live on year round, even like I don't know, winter in northern Wisconsin?
Yes, actually this is kind of my second big project in this way. In 2019 I did a year where I grew and foraged all of my food, but that included the garden. And on that trip I actually came up here to Wisconsin and I saw the bounty up here unlike anywhere I'd ever seen before. We have such a bounty of food growing. The key for anyone who is interested in living, you know, completely off the land, as someone would say, is to harvest that bounty throughout the summer and fall and then store that bounty through the winter. So it is possible to live solely off the food of Wisconsin if desired.
Talking to Rob Greenfield about his foraging. He is living for a month right now, only eating foraged food, as he mentioned, from a forest or maybe a parking lot. What, when you talk to people about this, Rob, what are people most surprised about? Like, really, you can eat that?
Yeah, I think people are surprised at just how much food is growing around us. Whether, again, it's, you know, in your sort of deep wilderness or it's right on the sidewalks, it's the weeds in our front yard, it's the fruit trees growing, you know, along the sidewalks. People are amazed at how food is just growing everywhere. And I was just out for the last 5 hours around Madison. And today I harvested, you know, maitake, which is also called hen of the woods, and all sorts of different greens like nettle and watercress and herbs like bee balm and wild onions galore. So people are amazed about that. And then I think people are also amazed that actually so much out there is actually edible. A lot of people are taught to, you know, be afraid of everything, mm-hmm. but you don't have to be afraid of everything as long as you're, you know, paying attention and opening your eyes.
Now, not everybody is going to do something like this, forage only for a month. But with this project and your bigger project, the Regeneration, Equity, and Justice, I think it's called, what are some of the things you hope people take away from this?
Sure. Yeah. For me, I take on sort of extreme projects that are designed to capture people's attention, to take them along on the journey with me. But the goal is not that anybody has to do this. The goal is to think about our current food system. Our current food system is incredibly destructive. With most bites on our plate, we're taking a bite from the planet. And I am trying to, you know, just show people that other ways are possible, that we can connect to food through foraging. We can connect to food through supporting our local farmers, going to the local farmers market, through growing some of our own food. And none of this has to be alone. We can do this together in community, and this can be enjoyable and fun while regenerating our earth.
Okay, and I got to ask, you're eating a lot of foods that you foraged, obviously. What's your favorite one they're eating? What is like the tastiest thing you're eating this month?
The tastiest thing. Wow. Well, I would say at this, whatever's tastiest is whatever I'm thinking about in the moment. Today I harvested a lot of aronia. So I'm going to be making aronia juice, and I love that. And wild rice. I mean, I crave wild rice, and of course, applesauce. But actually, what I'm really excited to hopefully find on my trip to New York City, which, you know, over the next 3 weeks, I'll be leading these plant walks from, you know, in Chicago and Cincinnati, Boston, Providence, New Haven, and along the way. And I'm really excited to find pawpaw, because that's a new one for me.
Pawpaw?
Pawpaw.
I hear that. I think it's a tropical thing. What is it really?
People think it's tropical, but it's a native plant. Now, it actually doesn't grow in Wisconsin, but I'm going to be in Ohio in just a couple of days, so that's where I'll get into that.
All right, Rob, thanks a lot for sharing your project with us.
My pleasure. And if anybody wants to join all across the country, my website is just robgreenfield.org/reconnect, and that has all the information and tour dates, and you can join me on social media where I'm posting fun ways to get involved.
That's Rob Greenfield, a Wisconsin-based activist. For 1 month, Rob is foraging for all of his food from forests to city parks. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a preview of a new WPR podcast launching today. It's called Uprooted, exploring the lives of Cubans in Wisconsin.
Imagine, you're a 16-year-old kid thousands of miles from home. You've just stepped off a plane in Wisconsin. For the next few months, you'll be living at an army base. There are strangers, people who don't speak your language. It feels like you're living in prison. Your whole world has been uprooted. You think you're alone, far from family and friends, when suddenly you discover your father, who you've barely had a relationship with, is also at this military base in Wisconsin. This was the reality for Armando Rodriguez, who left his barracks at Fort McCoy daily to meet with his father, Guillermo Rodriguez.
Yo veía a mi papá del lado allá.
I saw my dad on the other side of the fence, and we talked from afar. And we spent about a month and some like that.
Armando and Guillermo are from Cuba and had to live at Fort McCoy until they found a home in the United States. They were here in Sparta, Wisconsin, because of the Mariel boat lift. For 5 months in 1980, the Cuban government opened its borders and let its residents leave for the U.S. during the height of the Cold War. Almost 125,000 Cubans fled the island and landed in South Florida by boat.
She says more craft are expected to make the journey in what could build into a Dunkirk-like evacuation.
Because of that, the president yesterday declared a state of emergency in southern Florida.
There's a hopeful feeling that they will be allowed to stay in this country and to find jobs.
Many refugees left their homeland to find a better opportunity or escape Fidel Castro's communist government. Some wanted to be reunited with family. Others were plucked from jail and pushed onto boats.
We arrived here in Key West, and then we arrived at Fort McCoy. In Fort McCoy, I stayed for 5 months.
Armando was one of the nearly 15,000 people sent to Fort McCoy in Wisconsin before he found a home. Most of the Cubans who came to Wisconsin left the area after connecting with family or finding sponsors. But some people, like Armando, remained in southern Wisconsin. Johnson. They created lives here as bus drivers, fathers, and musicians. Now, 42 years later, many of the refugees want to visit Cuba. People like Armando want to go just one more time, but they can't.
I've never been able to visit Cuba. I would like to visit Cuba. I'm not allowed to go. And if I go, I can't come back. I'm in the same situation as everyone else who has committed a crime.
His friends in Wisconsin feel the same.
I'm 63 years old. Wow, times go fast, you know. And I haven't given up. I have faith.
The immigration, you know, give us a second chance. Why can those Cubans get a second chance?
Do you want to go back and visit also?
Yeah, I want to go see my mama before she died.
I can go to Cuba.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, I can go. Because I was lucky. I never commit a crime. The only problem is when I want to do my passport, I talk to my sister to send my birth certificate. And when I see my birth certificate, that's wrong. That's not my name.
Because when I tried to kill him, I always say, you know, the reason I did it because I want to go back to Cuba.
I'm Maureen McCollum, and this is Uprooted, a new podcast from Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll hear from Cuban Wisconsinites who arrived here more than 40 years ago. These are the unheard voices behind the headlines. What were their lives like in Cuba? What was the journey like across the sea? What has life been like in Wisconsin? And after 40 years, where do they go from here? Subscribe to Uprooted wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see more at WPR.org/uprooted. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up, we talk about the need for more Latinx medical professionals in Wisconsin and how a new organization is working to address that problem. That's next here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, a new Wisconsin organization is aiming to increase Latinx representation in medical professions. The Medical Organization for Latino Advancement, or MOLA, first started in Chicago in 2017. Now there's a chapter operating in Wisconsin. Dr. Patricia Tellez-Giron is an associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. She's chair of the Latino Health Council of Dane County, and she's founding president of the Wisconsin chapter of MOLA. Dr. Tellez-Giron, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Can you talk about why you are tackling this problem? How do we see people of Latina backgrounds underrepresented in medicine?
Well, we know that the Latinx community is the fastest growing in the United States. And even though we are about 19%, the representation of health professionals is only like 3-4%. So we definitely need to increase the representation to be able to serve the fastest growing population.
What does it mean if people of Latinx backgrounds are underrepresented in medicine? How does that, first of all, affect patients?
Well, research has shown that when you have a healthcare provider that looks like you, that understands your language, your cultural background, your health outcomes are going to be better. So if we don't increase the representation, we're going to continue having health disparities that have been in existence for many years.
Now, this group is new in Wisconsin, but I understand you've been working to be a mentor to try to bring people into medical fields for quite a while now. What are some of the things you and your colleagues have been doing already?
Yeah, many years ago, we recognized that we needed to start somewhere and that it takes many years to grow a healthcare provider. So we started pairing up with pre-med students here at the university with a group that is called PALMA, Professional Association for Latinos for Medical School Access. And we started helping them with clinical shadowing experiences, community work, and mentoring. What we realized is that many times our students need a lot of coaching, a lot of support, a lot of sharing, like, yes, you can do this, don't let anybody else tell you that you can do that. Many times they come from backgrounds that are very difficult, families that are undocumented, poor, first-generation college students, and we really need to help them get to the place where they need to be to help our communities.
Yeah, becoming a doctor is a lot of work to begin with. Can you talk about a little more about some of the additional hurdles that some of the younger students you're working with are facing?
Yes, so many of our students, even though they were born in the United States, they are raised by families that speak only Spanish. So that could be a big, big problem. Being first-generation students here in the United States, the families do not know the system or how to help them get to sometimes even high school or higher education. Racism is definitely one, and discrimination is one that really gets on the way. And resources, because they come from families that are poor, and to go to medical school, it takes a lot of money through the years of pre-med and then through medical school. So lots of different factors.
We're talking to Dr. Patricia Tellez-Giron, Associate Professor in the UW-Madison Department of Family Medicine and Community Health, about this new chapter of an organization called the Medical Organization for Latino Advancement here in Wisconsin. Dr. Tellez-Giron, let's talk about this group now. You've got this chapter in Wisconsin. What is the focus? What kind of things will you be working on?
So the collaboration with the mother organization, MOLA in Chicago, started exactly because we realized that in Wisconsin, we did not have anything like it. We look at what they are offering, and they are offering mentorship, they are offering education and research, well-being experiences, advocacy, public health. So eventually we want to try to offer the same thing to our membership. We are starting with mentoring, which is what we have been doing now for several years, as you presented before. And then from there, we're going to try to grow and offer the same benefits that MOLA Chicago is offering their members. For now, by pairing with MOLA Chicago, we can offer our membership the same services through them.
Now, how about people who aren't in pre-med programs yet? What would you do, or what do you think could be done to encourage people, you know, in the high school level or maybe even lower, to start thinking, well, I don't see doctors who look like me, but maybe I can be a doctor?
Yes, and we have been doing that as well. It's kind of similar to what we call a ladder program. So what we do, we have our pre-med students work with the high schoolers, and then from there, the medical school, the medical students work with the pre-med, and then the residents work with the medical students, and so on. And now here in Madison, the district has started a path for health. So we're going to try to pair up with them too, and they start from high school in the very beginning of high school, and sometimes even in middle school. So yes, and we want to increase the representation again, so that when the families go to the doctor and the kids see a doctor that looks like them, that speaks like them, that they say, you know, I can be one of them. So, but for that, we need more of us.
At one point, of course, you were a pre-med student, Dr. Tellez-Giron. What kind of lessons did you take from your experience then that you're hoping to share with new generations?
Well, I actually did my medical school in Mexico. So it was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of support and a lot of people that looked like me. But thanks to that experience, when I moved to the United States and I had to basically start over, I realized the needs that our students have in here and the difference of how the resources have to be targeted in a different way to our students. And thanks to that is that I can talk to my pre-med students and tell them all the requirements that are needed, and not only talk to them about the requirements that are needed, but give them those requirements. So I give them experiences in the clinic with shadowing. They work with us in the community. And then I basically become kind of their mother. I call them my chickens because I help them with anything that they need. And I have other team members that also do.
And briefly, as we wrap up, if somebody out there is listening and saying, hey, yeah, you're talking about me, I'm going or hoping to go into pre-med or I'm in pre-med, where would you point them toward to get more information?
Definitely MOLA, M-O-L-A. So go and become a member. And then through that, we can reach out to you and see what your needs are and start helping you. So when you go to MOLA, you'll say MOLA Wisconsin and register. It's actually free right now for students to sign in.
Dr. Tejas Giron, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Patricia Tejas Giron, Associate Professor in the UW-Madison Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. We talked to her today about a new Wisconsin chapter of the group Medical Organization for Latino Advancement, which she helped found here in the state. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, from pumpkin spice to dumb phone, new words and phrases are entering the dictionary. Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett from Away With Words are back with us for a look at the origins of words and how they enter common use in a language. And should downtown communities provide free parking? A city planning expert says convenient free parking often comes at an unreasonable cost to communities. That's more, that and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.